Mr. O'Sullivan, Rail 17. Now, you were told that you were going to go to Germany. What did you feel about that? What did you?
We were threatened. We'd always been told, even in England, that the Germans would mistreat us if we got captured.
Who told you that?
The NCO, the army. That the Germans wouldn't be. We weren't treated in Germany because of the Nazis and that sort of thing. And we were trying to go into Germany.
That was general amongst all of the PAWs.
I know I was.
And what do the Germans tell you to take to prepare to move when you were on your way?
You took what you could carry on your person. No kit bags or sacks or whatever. Just what you could carry on your person.
So what did you have when you left?
I had a field of cigarettes left. And I had a great coat and a uniform. Because that's all I'd ever had.
And what about coat and utensils?
I didn't have any. We had a clinton, being what had been made into a tin would have been made into a cup. That's all I had.
And what about the other prisoners? What
well, some of them had Dixies, what do you call them? What the hell do you call the two things that go together? Anyway, Dixies, aren't they? Some of them had knives and forks, even. That would manage to keep.
What about the, accumulated Red Cross parcels and cigarettes that people have built up and
some of the used to call them the barons who run the games, some of them had a lot of cigarettes. But this now they're not going to be worth a lot. Because if the Germans found them they would take them. So nobody was buying cigarettes unless they were going to smoke them. In all this, we've never mentioned where people lost the watches, have we?
Yeah, we'll talk about that then, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because that happened before that happened in the Italian camp where we first went into it.
Could you talk about that then, Mr. Russell?
When we went into this camp, there was washing facilities, there was, and we had to strip off and back and that sort of thing.
This is the camp in Sicily?
This is the camp in Italy.
The first camp in Italy, yeah.
15, I think it was 15. And they took every, if you had any jewellery of any sort, rings, watches, any jewellery at all, they took them off you. And they told us that they would be returned to the British government, to the British PAWs, and that I don't suppose anybody ever got anything back. So there's. They even took knives off. Some of them had sets of knives and forks, a knife off a spoon, which they had issued in the army, and where they managed to take with them. They took the knife off them, which it could be served as a weapon. But they took all personal jewellery as well. And nobody ever said more of that.
Just going back, staying on the backtrack a little bit, but I think some of the other PAWs have talked about the Italians' attitude to tinned food with the bayonet. Did that happen in your camp where they would pierce the.
So that you couldn't save it? Yeah,
that happened.
Yeah. Sometimes you get an eye-tied, there was one we used to call him Snowy. He was blonde-haired Italian officer and he treated you like men.
Which camp was this in?
In this camp.
On mainland Italy?
Yeah. But there's also another one who was a little small and dark, and he was a little bastard, he was. And when so many cross parcels had been issued, he would often not. They would walk around the barracks, the house where they were, and if you had a box of red cross, if you opened the box, and you look in to see what we got, and very often he'd just stick his knife straight through the top of the tin. Yeah, so you couldn't save it. whether it was to stop, you know, saving for a scapegoat or what, I don't know. I think it was just having chance of being just a bully. Because I never know anybody who tried to escape from not from there anyway.
So going back to when the Germans took over, they told you you were going to Germany. Was that actually an order that just said you're only allowed what you can carry? So was there stuff left behind then?
Lots of stuff. Must have been an awful lot of stuff. Because some of them only been in there 2 or 3 years, haven't they? You know, and they'd accumulated lots of stuff. I mean, a lot of them followed a bit, as I said earlier on. There was carving. They'd carved horses and you know. If they couldn't carry on the person, they didn't take them with them.
Was there any attempt like to eat the food that was left behind and things like that? Did people try?
Food you always made sure you could carry.
So that was the priority?
You put it inside your battle dress jacket. Your blouse. You get an awful lot of stuff inside your battle dress blouse.
You mentioned the barons, the men that were like running the various operations. Can you remember any of those and what kind of...
I can remember seeing them, but I didn't gamble. So all I did was, when Hughie Kenley got me, we would often walk around and watch him playing pitch and toss, crown and anchor, cards. But all we did was watch, because Hughie didn't gamble either. He thought it was a great waste of time. But there was a lot of money on cigarettes. Was lost in one momentum again.
And these men had to just get on the trains with the rest of you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was no... The Germans didn't make any... Everybody was the same. You were prisoner of war, and that's... You can carry... What you can carry on your person, you can take.
So, can you describe the process, then, of the move to the train and so on? How was that?
They just marched us down to the train station, and they were 40 men in wagon, 40 men in that wagon, and that and the other, and we went.
And who were you with at this stage?
I was with Sergeant Bristow, and I also remember being in the wagon. There was a small window, small grill, fairly high up. You could look out of if he was tall enough or somebody would hold you. I always remember the first night we went to sleep. Bristow warned me up and said, if you don't take your effing books off, I'll take the boogers off for you. Oh, what was he wearing? And he said, you keep bloody kicking me. It was 40 men laid down on that. There's not a lot of room. And it's not unusual. Well, it said on it 40 MR8, 40 men or 8 horses it was, 8 cattle. So, and that's how we travelled into through the Brenner Pass.
Did they give you a meal and so on?
They stopped every so often and gave us meals.
And what would it be?
It would be paired. It would be hot soup, bread, and coffee. And you could go to toilets. But if you went to toilets, there was always guards. German guys, now making sure he didn't.
And I think you mentioned off the tape that some of the men, because of the hot weather, that the clothes that they had were pretty minimal. Can you just describe that?
Well, most of them were the people who escaped from the camp, and the Germans wouldn't let them go in to get their proper stuff. Some of them were in just shorts and shirts. Some of them hadn't even got a shirt on. Someone who had just boots with no socks. And what clothes they had, what clothes they did, what it went back in that, they just went. And, you know, they were just. And they also had eye ties, Italian prisoners of war. On the same train. They coached behind us. We were the last wagon on the train with English troops in, and the wagon behind us had eye ties in it. And we stopped at a think they call the place in not London. It was somewhere in the Italian border before you went into the Bonifacio thing. And we stopped there for a meal, and while we was in this, while we got back on the coach in the cattle trucks, and the outside was back in the cattle truck behind us, and a youth came onto the station, and he was talking to the blokes, to the ITAs. And two German guys walked up, got all of them, slung him in. If you want to talk to him, you can go with him. And he finished up in German rules. So whatever happened, what is his life thought, I don't know. It would be, you know, what his family thought, anyway. But they said, if I want to really talk to him in there. They didn't stand any. Because at this time the Germans didn't like the Italians because they were back in. So there was harder on the Italians than they were on us. I always found the Germans treated us with respect or favourably anyway. They didn't badmouth us or anything. A lot of them thought we were very similar to them anyway, the Germans and the English.
Did anybody make any attempt to talk to the few German guards at all, to communicate with them?
They would talk to you. They'd even light a cigarette for you. If, you know, I mean, when we got off the trains for a meal, there was all along the length of the train was sort of German soldiers with rifling or machine guns or whatever, right the full length. Right round the area where we were feeding. But I mean, a lot of blokes, when they had something to eat, the first thing they do is light a cigarette up. And if they had a cigarette, no matches or anything like that, the German would give them a light. And if you offer the German a cigarette to the German soldier, well, he wouldn't take it. If you tried to barter with him, you know, if you wanted to buy something off him, I don't know if he'd take the cigarettes. But if he offered him the cigarette to smoke while he was talking to him, he wouldn't do that anyway. He wouldn't. I think the Germans were trying to be seen as collaborating with him. With the English.
So how long were you on the train for?
I don't know. 3 days, I remember. 2 or 3 days, anyway. And we stopped every so often. We didn't stop at night. We never got off the train during the night. Once you go to toilet, that was unfortunate. The door would open about that wide.
That's about 6 inches.
Uh-huh. 6 inches. If you wanted to urinate, you had to do it out there.
What was the morale amongst your fellow prisoners at this
stage? Well, we were fine together, weren't we? Not fine. We weren't fine in doing it, you know. But we were apprehensive of what was going to happen to us in June. Because we'd been told the Germans would mistreat us anyway.
And when you got across the German border, was there anything that stands out in your mind of what you could say?
The first thing we got to, what was it, Kempfer, was it? 4B. When we got to 4B, it was just another prison camp. There was Americans in there.
Could you describe your arrival?
It was the same as every other place. At 4B, we marched to the camp, and before you got to the actual camp, there was a holding ground. You couldn't go into the camp until you'd been shaved, until they'd all your hair taken off. And there was only 2 off shaving machines. And you had to get in on the first night we were in that holding ground, we didn't get into the camp itself properly. So we didn't get fed either that night. There were some Sikhs with us. They weren't with me, but they were in the same area. They got through because they didn't have to have their cut. They didn't cut the Sikhs' hair. And the only way you could get your hair cut was you got in a line. What went down to these 2 machines, you sat on the machine and turned the handle for the bloke to cut his fellow's hair. and then you'll get off and sit in and get your hair cut, and the bloke behind you will turn the handle, and that's how he did it. And as soon as you got into the camp, proper, that you took all your clothes off and they went into a delighting factory or things. And there was a big, yeah, see this big Russian man with a beard like Santa Claus, but it was black, and with a bucket full of disinfectant and a towel and something like a towel brush. And as you, after you come out of the bathhouse, you walked up to him, and he all around your private area, underneath your arm, swash, 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 with disinfectant. And you went through and picked your clothes up again, and then you found, then they found you, put you in a billet, in a big hut, and you found your beds. And half the beds in this place had been wrecked.
In what way?
Because the only way you could heat anything was to burn your bed rats. So they burnt you, and then we take every other rat out. But you didn't take your own rats out unless you were forced. If you could get somebody else's rats, you did. But I mean, you remember to pinch somebody's a bit further down the bottom, somebody was pinching you as well the other way. So, yeah, these were in tiers, these bunks. So you always left one to make sure that nobody pinched your rats. You looked after the three beds. Someone tried to make electrical heating plates, plug it into the lights with a lead into a metal disc or a metal plate and put it into water to boil it. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it fueled all the lights. We got issued with the Red Cross parcels there, one between four. And we shared them out. The ones we got was all tin tomatoes. They weren't all tin tomatoes, but there was tin tomatoes, there was chocolates, there was. But the Americans had got different parcels to us, and theirs had tins of oats in them, porridge oats. And you could go down to the American lines, if you had a tin of tomatoes, you could get two tins of porridge oats. And that's what we did. Because the Americans, I don't know whether it's because they don't eat in America, porridge, but they weren't interested in the porridge, but they wanted a tin tomato.
Now, you were assigned a POW number. When did that happen? Could you describe
it? When we went in there, everybody got a number as they went into. That's when we got their little discs.
When you went in where?
In 4B.
Yes, but where, at what stage?
As soon as you went in. After you put your clothes back on, you went into another little shed sort of thing, and you were all given a number.
And how was that done?
The numbers was already on the discs. And you were given a disc. And your number... I'm sure the number was always on the disc.
I think other veterans have also talked about having a photograph taken. Did that happen?
The photograph was maybe six of you stood, and the numbers was say it's 4, 5, 6, 7, and the last one was 8. The last three numbers you could take them out, so they could have they could make 4, 5, 6. 801 or 702, it was adjustable, you know what I mean? The numbers were loose, so many numbers were loose in these little discs, and you had this disc in front of you.
That's like
a big number plate.
A plate, and you changed that, yeah. And you held that. Yeah. So you did have your photograph individually taken?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they were never put on the documents as far as I know. They must have been for German records.
And can you remember what your number was? Now,
I think I could only find the number if I looked at some of that.
Some of the documents. So what kind of place was 4B? You've described how many bunks were in the billet where you were?
Well, I should say there was There was at least 1,000 men in Fort Bean. And there was always on the move. NCOs, above the rank of sergeant, were segregated. NCOs below sergeant was just mixed with all men, you know, well before the war. So there was always people going out of the camp. In truckloads. Every day there were some people moved out.
Could you just describe the general picture of what the camp looked like? Is it?
Well, it was like a big hangar, which was filled up with beds, bunk beds.
That was your individual?
There was very little room between the bunk beds. The corridors, if you wanted to pass anybody in the corridor, you turn sideways because the bunk beds were that close to the beds were that close together.
And that was your individual hut?
Yeah, but it was a big hut. There was a hell of a lot of men in it.
And how many huts were there in the camp as a whole?
I don't know. 5 or 6, I think, but I don't know.
And what about, you mentioned the Americans being in 4B. What other prisoners were there, do you think?
There were some free French. The Antis were segregated. They didn't let the Antis in with it. There was free French, there was some Dutch. Because the Dutch were very methodically clean, the Dutch. They were the living Dutch. I've seen the Dutch. They were fanatics for being clean. And they cleaned the utensils and their area was clean and everything else. The Americans were just saying as us, so there was also back in Americans in this. We were there for half Americans. Some of the Americans were there born.
Paratroopers.
Paratroopers. But I didn't meet any of our paratroopers at all, so
what about people like the RAF and the Navy, were any of those?
No, no, sorry. Because nearly all these prisoners have come from Italy. I mean, I would imagine there was the odd one, other RAF man, or but the majority of them would come out of Italy.
And how long were you at Starlight 4B, do you think?
I can't remember how long I was there. The only thing I can remember is me and Johnny Ivey. By this time, I'd met Johnny Ivey. Because the sergeant I was with, Histo, was segregated from the. He wasn't allowed to become with the other ranks. All the sergeants, all the ranks of both sergeants were segregated. And I met up with Johnny Ivey, and he was set on his top bunk on his bed, and we brewed a cup of tea, we begged some hot water, we brewed a pot of tea, and I bet it had been brewed 3 times before. And it was one of the best cookies he ever tasted. And that's and I had my tin mug. And Johnny Early had us in the mug. And then he was on a lorry and on the way to Sweden.
Yeah. Now, before we get to that, I think you mentioned off the tip the reasons why you got the men were mixed up and separated was to do with when you got your hair cut. You had a story about that, that the people were desperate to. Could you just explain that on
tape? Someone was that desperate to get. The first night, we didn't get our hair cut, so we stopped outside in this compound. And it wasn't very warm. So the next day, these two machines were working. There's a hell of a lot of men to go through. So somebody had the bright idea of cutting their hair with razors. But you can't. The time that. Cut the hair and shave the red, they'd have been better off in the queue for the machine because they made such an awful bloody mess of it. And you think you could cut your hair with a razor? No, you can't. It makes an awful bit. And it's very, very sore. So that in the end, they're still finished up having to wait for the. But what annoyed everybody was the suits. With hair down to their asses, half of them. With the turbans, and they didn't get and I mean, I don't know what happened to it because they went, Because they didn't have to have a nice shed, they went through on the first day.
And I think when we talked about this off the tape, you were saying that that meant that you got mixed, you got separated from people that you knew, and ended up with new people.
The only way you could get through, you had to go every way. You had to work on this machine. Now, if you and I went down, come into this queue, I'm here, you're behind me, that machine finishes first, so I go and do that one. This bloke's taking a bit longer. So when the time I've got my haircut, you are only just starting on yours. The Germans won't let you stand. Once you'd had your haircut, you had to go through them gates. So that was it.
Were the German guards in this area then?
Yeah, the German guards were. There was a gate between the reception area, whatever they like to call it, and the actual barracks where we were going in. Yeah, and then again, you got stripped off, and you give your clothes to a German or a Russian, whichever you was there. Some were Germans, some were Russians. You went into the bathhouse, and when you come out of the bathhouse, you met the big Russian with his paintbrush, and at the end of the row, you got your clothes back, and there was still steam in a lot of them, which had been through a stick, and there was very brittle sort of, you're not brittle, but harsh. You know.
Did that process work in terms of its delos?
Yes, it did.
Now,
we did relatively nice in Germany.
Now, while you were at 4B, could you just again talk through the routine in that camp? You know, we've talked about the routine in the one in Italy.
There was no real routine. In 4B, there was no parades, there was no Griff newspapers either. It was in a reception area, and how we were picked for different, they just come and said, 24 men in train, going in that truck.
And they were up, they'd all be in that hut?
Yeah,
that you were
in a group. If you stood talking, and they wanted so many men, the nearest thing, because some of them, I talked to later on, they met some pairs of these ones in Germany, who deliberately sort of stopped at the back of the queue in 4B, at one end of the line, so they didn't get sent out. But I think they realised later on that they were wasting the time, they were still going to go. Because once all the POWs came from Germany, then what was able to work below the rank of sergeant was sent out to work.
Did you know that that was going to happen, dear?
No, I didn't know.
So that was a surprise.
We didn't know where we were going on with all them trucks. Well, we've got one truck and a trailer.
And how many people did you know on the truck and the trailer?
Johnny Ivy.
And that was it?
That was it.
And
we didn't know at all. We never met. We'd most probably seen each other in the camp, but I'd never met any of them individually.
And you were out of 4B on this truck. How did Germany strike you, if you could see?
Well, it was like England. The weather was similar, the atmosphere was similar. And it was, wasn't it, really? I mean, Germany's very similar to England in a lot of ways.
And were you able to see any civilians or...
No, there were civilians on the roadside, and they just ignored us. They thought we were winning the war, didn't they? And that way. You see, they've seen all these prisoners coming in, and they really thought we were winning the war.